Welcome to NHL Draft Class. I'm Adam Kimmelman, and it is a big day. NHL Central Scouting has released its final rankings for the 2023 NHL Draft, the top North American and international skaters and goalies. Mike, this is feeling like now we kind of have a blueprint to go off of for who might go where when we get to Nashville at the end of June.
It's an exciting time, Adam. You know, we'll have Dan Marr, the vice president of NHL Central Scouting, on with us this morning, and he's going to discuss these rankings. We'll take a deep dive into some of these players that maybe made some movement from second round at the midterm into a first round status, possibly at the final here. So it's interesting, but you know, the guy at the top, we all expected it to be Connor Bedard, and at number two, Adam Fantilli. You can't argue with the two of those players. I mean, they've just had outstanding seasons, one in the Western Hockey League. Bedard and Fantilli just had an absolutely phenomenal freshman season at the University of Michigan, right, Adam? Winning the Hobie Baker Award.
Hobie Baker, Frozen Four, and Bedard did, you know, things that we haven't seen in a generation in the Western Hockey League. 70 goals, 150 points. And then what he did in the Western Hockey League playoffs, 20 points in seven games. I think he had six multi-point games in that series that Regina lost to Saskatoon. You know, just a remarkable run. Two very different players, but two guys who look like they're going to be future NHL stars and guys you can build your franchise around. And you don't get that very often. Two guys with that stature, that ability.
No, you don't. And now they're both looking forward to getting some time off. They'll prepare for the NHL Scouting Combine, which is going to be June 5th through the 10th. We always look forward to that. But it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where these players actually go once we know the results of the NHL Draft Lottery, Adam.
Well, let's get right into it. Let's bring in Dan. Dan, thank you for joining us today on NHL Draft Class. Let's jump right into the final rankings. And was there any debate among the group at Central Scouting that Bedard would go number one? And I'm wondering, since you've been overseeing the meetings, was it the shortest amount of time you've spent debating who number one would be?
Well, Connor Bedard certainly presented some unique circumstances. He's been well known in the hockey world for the last 3 years. So there was zero debate. and like going into the season, he was slotted at number one, and there hasn't been any conversation, comments, discussion otherwise. He's delivered at every level that he's played at. He's risen to the occasion. He's performed with his elite skill set that there just never was a conversation. So when we started the midseason meetings, we did a cursory vote just to get his name on the board. And then there wasn't very much discussion on him. In fact, the first time I saw him play was mid-March. It was at a game with Mike. That was my first live view of him this year. I did travel to Regina early in the season last October and met with him just to talk to him about what goes on with draft year and combine, that type of discussion. But I saw him go head-to-head with Mitch Koff at the U18 tournament in Dallas in 2020-2021. Like right from there, I saw how he got better game to game, and he's continued to do that. And he does so at being one of the youngest members of his team, whether it's with Regina or with Canada's World Junior Camps, World Junior Team. So he seems to just be like a sponge. He takes it all in, and then he takes his game to the next platform. He's just a very fun player to watch. And he's one of those guys that just takes you off the edge of your seat every game. He does something.
Yeah, Adam, just to follow up with that, too. One of the things that I remember writing in my notebook at the final meetings when Dan was orchestrating the meetings there earlier this month, on the opening day of the meetings after the votes were tabulated for Bedard and Fantilli at 1-2, Dan actually asked after the votes were tabulated, any debate on the first two names and you can hear a pin drop, it was like no one was going to say anything. So I thought that was kind of funny. I remember writing it down too because it was so funny. But just a quick follow up on Bedard, because we can never have enough of Bedard, Dan. So much good with what he's been able to do this year, as you mentioned. But for you, what was maybe the one area on the ice that set him apart most? And what about him off the ice? Because obviously you've spoken to him, you've spoken to his agents. What about him off the ice was maybe equally impressive?
Well, on the ice, like I said, you don't often get a player that puts you on the edge of your seat once or twice or more each game, like each and every game. And the other aspect is that when he does make the odd mistake or things don't go right, he's got the wherewithal, the wits about him to correct that. Like, you don't often see the same mistake happen twice. You don't often see the same play not completed twice, because he's got that ability just to make that correction. And sometimes it's within a game, but he just continually works to be the best he can be, and he just improves. And like off the ice, the way he carries himself, you know, all these quote generational talents and top end prospects, as you know, at Central Scouting, we do spend a lot of time with them in their draft year. And like, he's right at the top as being one of the more humble and most decent players that I've come across. You know, he's just going to be an awesome player in the National Hockey League, and he's just an all-around good person. I often say I don't have to meet the parents if I've met someone like their son. And that's how the saying goes, and you learn more about the family, their values and how they bring up their children and the support that they give them there. It just gives you just, we've got a very special player coming into the National Hockey League.
Dan, back in 2019, Central Scouting had 5 players from the USA National Team Development Program in the top 10 in the final rankings. It was Jack Hughes, Alex Turcotte, Trevor Zegras, Cole Caulfield, Matt Boldy. This year, there's 4. You've got Will Smith at number 3, Ryan Leonard at number 5, Oliver Moore at number 8, and Gabriel Perreault at number 10. What was it about Smith that set him apart from the rest of the group? And just as a whole, are there any similarities between the top guys from the 23 group and the best of that 2019 NTDP team?
The interesting part with the group of names and the core group of names is that, you know, Jack Hughes was a given. The other players are finding their way, and some find their way sooner. Doesn't matter what the order they were ranked or the order that they were drafted. You don't have to spend a lot of time around Trevor Zegras to see how infectious his personality is and his confidence is, and that just translates onto the ice. So, you know, like, he kind of just stepped right into a role when he got into the National Hockey League. And all of those players have had an upside, and you're projecting what their top end would look like. And to be honest with you, I think the top end of this draft class is slightly higher than the top end of that draft class. And we have to, you know, we'll take Jack Hughes out of the equation. And Will Smith, this has been the type of year where there's change, a lot of change in the player rankings from midseason to final season. And this was the type of year when you go and watch a team, you watch them a lot, and you're questioning yourselves, you know, are we over ranking them? Have we seen them too much? Are we too high on them? And you go in there saying you're going to be open-minded and you're going to look at them. And you're looking at them to see, do we have them too high? And every time you go and you watch Will Smith and you wonder if you have them too high, you leave the arena going, no, we don't have him too high. He deserves to be where he's at. He just goes out onto the ice and makes things happen. and he makes things happen when you need a goal. He does the right things when you're defending the lead, but he has that explosive offensive game that makes him a difference maker out there. And when you add in the speed that he has, and he's pretty focused, pretty competitive individual there, it just adds up to being an all-around all-star NHL prospect.
Yeah, that 2019 draft saw a record 8 NTTB players chosen in the first round, quite a season for the program. One player I wanted to focus on for a moment, Dan, Ryan Leonard. He's headed to BC next fall, and current University of Connecticut forward Matthew Wood. Now, Wood moved to number 4, one spot ahead of Leonard from the midterm. Both players, tons of upside. So I'm just curious why Wood was given the nod.
Well, when you get into the meetings there, and you've sat in on a number of them there, we put our list together, and initially Leonard was above Wood. And then we went back, we had our conversations, and we do look at the upside, what the players bring. And these are two distinctly different players that both bring value. They both have the skills and attributes to bring value to an NHL club. Matthew Wood got the nod slightly because he's competing at the NCAA level as an 05, a young player playing in a very mature league. And his development from the first half to the second half was startling. There are certain things that we look for in a player. Like, we know he can score. Like, he's got the offensive background. But there's certain things you look in a player. We felt his skating needed a bit of an upgrade, more so him improving his skating habits as far as keeping his feet moving, having a better stop-start game just to keep himself on top of the play. And he improved in that area greatly to where skating wasn't even brought up in the second half. But he just showed how well he was able to read the play at that level, create the offensive chances for his team. Like, down low in the offensive zone, he's one of the best players with the puck in this draft class. So he got a little bit of a nod in that direction, but you can make an equally good argument to draft Ryan Leonard. He kind of models himself after a Matthew Tkachuk type game, but he does bring that mix of skill and brawn or physicality. So he's a more of a, like, a complete package if you're looking for someone that has a little bit of everything going into it, because he's got the skills and the smarts and the skating to be an offensive producing player. So down the road, you're going to have two different players. They both may produce equally. And there's a very slight difference, but the fact that Matthew Wood's game showed some definite improvements in the second half at a higher level of competition, he just got the nod.
Dan, you've talked about the shuffling of the deck among the top prospects here. And one of the guys who moved up a significant amount was Nate Danielson from Brandon in the Western League, was 13 in the midterm, 7 in the final rankings. Where did his game improve in the second half of the season that you and the group kind of wanted to bump him up as significantly as you did?
Nathan Danielson is a player that has respect from all of our scouts, and I think all the NHL personnel and even opponents in his league. It's just because he plays the game the correct way. He plays it the right way. He is he has all the attributes that you would want in a player. He has the size. He's going to get stronger. He can skate. He's very smart. He competes with his skills and assets, and he has good skill sets. What we were looking to see was, he was playing on a team that didn't make the playoffs. So wins were hard to come by. The team was struggling at different times. They'd made a coaching change. Marty Murray came in and had a positive impact on the team. And you could just see the confidence in his game. And I can't say it was the way the coach utilized him, but it's just the situations that he was put in. He was a far more impactful player in the second half. If anyone he went from being considered, I think, a two-way forward because he has such a responsible game to where he became an offensive threat, an offensive forward. And the ability to show that finishing touch, that creativity on the offensive hockey side, that was something that, you know, it's important. The game is about scoring goals. The game is about speed and offense. And he shown that he made a significant improvement there, and he deserved that that jump in our final ranking.
Dan Ford, Gavin Brindley went to 23 from number 40, and Ford Grayson Sochin, number 24 from 42, both made significant jumps into the first round. Brindley really stood out over the second half at the University of Michigan, you know, after World Juniors. Sochin was a point-per-game player, solid playmaker. What did you see in each of them, and do you happen to have maybe an NHL comparable for each?
Well, Gavin Brindley, we had discussion on him at our mid-season meetings, and there was a faction of our group that felt he should be higher on the list, that he was a prospect, a first-round candidate. And this our meetings were taking place just as the World Juniors were concluding. The second half of the season in Michigan, he just took off to where, you know, I had an NHL GM come up to me one night saying he'd been at the Michigan game the night before, and Gavin Brindley was the best player on the ice. So he had a sensational second half. We probably should have had him a little higher on our midseason meeting, but now we found a landing spot for him where he'd be recognized in the first round. And it's a player that we would tell teams, you know, he's someone that's worth stepping up for. I know he likes to compare himself to being a Braden Point type of a prospect, but we find a little bit more comparable that he's a Jordan Kyrou type. And, you know, I don't have to tell you how well the comparables are at the National Hockey League level. So I think Gavin Brindley's future is quite bright. He stands out just because of the way he competes with his skills. He's just got a dogged determination out there. And Sochin, he's playing on a really good team in Seattle. And he doesn't get the top power play minutes at times. He doesn't get on the in the top six roles all the time. And he was able to take the ice time given to him and make the best of it. And what we just saw was a very smart player, good offensive skills, good offensive instincts, and someone who could play up and down in the lineup and not really miss a beat. So we appreciated what he brought from them. And we look up his comparable. He thinks he's a little bit like Pasternak. We view him a little bit more along the likes of a David Perron, where you've got a good, responsible player who can contribute when the opportunity's there to contribute. So both of them deserve to make that jump up in the rankings.
Dan, looking at the first round, the first 32, there's only six defensemen on the North American side, with Lukas Dragicevic from Tri-City in the Western League at number 18, the highest-rated defenseman. From what I've seen with Lukas, the pieces of video I've watched of him, it's the skating and the vision that really stand out. I'm wondering what the consensus feeling among Central Scouting was about Lukas that earned him that spot to be the number one North American defenseman.
We have him in an area on our list with Etienne Morin and Oliver Bonk. And they are the best defensive prospects from each of those leagues in the Canadian Hockey League. The thing with Lukas is he's his offensive game, like his game at the offensive blue line, makes him stand out far and above from anyone else in the draft class. There are parts to his game that need a lot of work, but there's lots of 17, 18-year-olds whose game need a lot of work before they get to the NHL level. He went down a little bit. We were hoping to see a little bit more correction in his game, but what we did see in the second half that he was managing his risk reward decisions a lot better. So he was taking less risks and getting more done, but he's an excellent skater. He's got the offensive instincts. He's going to be able to play and contribute at the NHL level. He just needs to learn the other parts of the game that are likely more important to a coach than they are to him at this point. But we can see where he's trying, and he's evolving, and he's learning to learn what it takes to be a National Hockey League player.
And when I spoke to right-wing Cohen Zimmer of Prince George at the top prospect game, he told me he describes himself as hardworking, physical, skilled, a real kind of responsible type player. You have him number 25 in the final lists here for North American skaters. My question to you is, and watching video and watching him play, real power forward type of guy. I'm wondering if he might be, if not the best, one of the best power forwards of this draft class.
Well, you could certainly put him in that category. And, I put Ryan Leonard in that category as well. But there aren't any Austin Matthews size players in this draft class. Colby Barlow is, a strong one-dimensional player in that he's a goal scorer. Callum Ritchie might be the most comparable power forward to Zimmer, where you could have them in the same class. It's just been a bit of an up and down year getting a good read on him, and also Riley Height on Prince George. And they both took a little bit of a hit, only for the simple reason that some other players' seasons really showed a significant change in the second half. And Zimmer had an excellent season. He 41 goals, 48 assists, 89 points, and a solid player. So I can't argue that he couldn't be considered the best power forward in this draft class. And our first round, after 15, these players can go anywhere, from 15 to 30. So he could go much higher in the draft, or he could go in the same range where we have him. But just all in all, I got to give it to him. He's been one of the more consistent players during the draft year.
Yeah, Riley Height, player you mentioned there from Prince George, number 21 on the final ranks, just to give our fans a heads up there. We always come back to Matvei Michkov towards the end of our interviews here, Dan. The last one for me, Michkov showed plenty over the second half of the season in the Continental Hockey League, remained at number 2 on the international list. So he was right behind Leo Carlson of Örebro in Sweden. And I guess my question is pretty simple. Why Carlson over Michkov? Why did it remain that way?
Well, as you know, it's a difficult situation with players from Russia. And there's not a lot of live eyes on him. He was sent down to the second division, and he produced, he played his game. He did what was expected of him. But so did Leo Carlson. I think there's a greater comfort level knowing that what you're going to get, when you're going to get it from Leo Carlson. He performed at the top level. He's performed at the World Juniors. Everywhere he's been, he's one of those players that, again, has risen to the occasion to be considered one of the top three players in this draft class. So there's nothing against Michkov, other than there is some uncertainty that teams are going to have to resolve and get themselves around. Our group's comfort level was having Carlson just ahead of him. Nothing more than that.
Dan, I want to ask you about David Reinbacher, number 5 on the international skaters list. I'm sure he was a known quantity to the central scouting staff, but seeing him at World Juniors, for me at least, really stood out on a lesser Austria team. It was an eye-opener. To me, he's reminiscent of Moritz Seider from 2019, a big, strong defenseman, skates well from a non-traditional, maybe hockey country. Is that a fair comparison for Reinbacher? And is there a chance he could be the first defenseman selected in Nashville?
Well, it's a valid comparison based on their history, where they've played at. As you know, he left his home country to to improve his game and play at a higher professional level. And, you know, it's expected he's going to play in the men's national world championships coming up here for Austria. He'll be one of the few draft eligible players that participate in that tournament, and he'll be well seen there. So he's going to make, I think, the same impression that Moritz Seider did. And he'll come to the combine, and if he's anything like Moritz Seider, he'll be the most popular player at the combine amongst all the players. But yes, he definitely could be the first defenseman that gets selected, and I think there's a high probability of that, especially if he can put on a strong performance to finish the season.
I guess the question is, Dan, is Ryan Bracker going to wear a bow tie at the draft? That's the big question. Yeah.
Just to impress, it never fails.
Yeah. Why not? Why not? Right.
Can I just add one thing? Do you mind?
No, absolutely.
Just like we just had Connor Bedard, you mentioned Adam Fantilli, and there wasn't much discussion. It's just, I have to tell you, I can't recall a player that's come into the NCAA, performed to the degree that he has, and, you know, come away with making it to the Frozen Four, winning the league championship, being the Hobey Baker Award. Like, I can't recall a player that's been that focused. He it's like he was on a mission this season. And there was just, it's just so impressive. And he deserves to be where he's ranked for us, and he deserves to go as high as he can in the draft. I just want to acknowledge you don't see players come along and put on that type of season very often.
Well, this was great, Dan. Thanks so much for joining us and providing the great insight, and best of luck with the preparations for the NHL Draft Combine in June. We will see you then.
See you in Buffalo. Thank you.
Great stuff from Dan Marr, the vice president of NHL Central Scouting, going over the final rankings list. He hit pretty much every topic, and we're going to get sort of a better feeling on where these guys could go when we have the NHL Draft Lottery on May 8th from the NHL Network Studios in Secaucus, New Jersey. We have the odds for the 16 picks. I can't say the 16 teams because somebody might have two picks. The Arizona Coyotes could have two picks in the lottery, but that's going to really answer a lot of questions, and somebody's going to almost be walking away with a winning Powerball lottery ticket, right? Mike, you know, Anaheim's got the best odds at 18.5%, followed by Columbus and Chicago. San Jose and Montreal round out the top five, but, you know, and Dan kind of touched on it as well. Whoever wins number two also feels like they're going to have a foundational player that you can build around.
Yeah, everyone likes to talk about which team could benefit more from having Connor Bedard on their team or an Adam Fantilli on their team. And fact of the matter is, and you mentioned a few of the teams, Anaheim with the best odds, then you got Columbus, Chicago, San Jose, the Canadiens at five, and Arizona six as far as lottery odds. You know, they can all use an elite centerman, right? And the fact of the matter is, we know that they can also excel on wing because each of them played wing for Canada at the World Junior Championship. So it's going to be interesting to see how the lottery shakes out. I don't know if there's ever been as much drama in anticipation of a draft lottery, knowing the type of and caliber of players that we have coming out here. And let's face it, Adam, I mean, everyone knew and Dan talked about it, you know, tongue in cheek, that there was really no discussion on, you know, who was chosen one and two in the final ranks, because it's rather obvious. So it's going to be fun to see where these teams wind up. And one other thing, you know, as we're talking to Dan, we discussed a lot of these first round and possible second round picks in the draft. And one player I thought was real interesting, and I was following throughout the course of the, you know, the NCAA tournament and the Frozen Four, was Luke Mittelstadt. Obviously the brother of Casey, who plays for the Buffalo Sabres. Luke was a left-handed D at the University of Minnesota this year. He was a freshman, and this will be his third year going through the draft. Passed over the first two, finished with 5 goals, 16 assists, 21 points in 38 games for the Gophers this year. Was a plus 22 three power play goals, and he was number 97 on the final ranks of North American skaters. So there is a shot here. They got him in maybe a third, fourth, fifth round projection. Goes about 5'11", 185 pounds. Had just six PIMs this year too. So he's one of those players that is on the ice. He gets the job done. I know Coach Bob Motzko loved what he saw on him. He can kind of filter in that bottom four role on defense and what we've seen this year. But I think his play at Minnesota really, really valuable for him to showcase his skills and what he was able to bring to the University of Minnesota. And obviously they ran into a buzzsaw with Rand Pecknold, a friend of ours, a friend of the show. He was on during the World Juniors way back when, Adam, right? And for Quinnipiac winning their first national championship. So congratulations to Rand Pecknold and Quinnipiac. But it was quite a final there. Quinnipiac beating Minnesota, scored that late goal in the third, then early in overtime to win it in the national championship game. So congrats to Quinnipiac. But Luke Mittelstadt to me is a player that, you know, I'm going to be watching to see where he might go in this draft.
There's a lot of guys. And you know, just to double back on Luke Mittelstadt for a sec, our colleague Corey Long wrote a great story on him. I believe it was the morning we published that story, the morning of the championship game. And then he scores in the first period of the championship game. So you can, he can appreciate that NHL.com bump that he got from us. But I just look at, you know, and you mentioned it before, like who could use Connor Bedard? Who couldn't use Connor Bedard? Yeah. You look at, like, can you imagine Connor Bedard and Trevor Zegras on a line? It'd be Michigan's every shift.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about Connor Bedard and Johnny Gaudreau on a line together?
Yeah, that would have been like Kent Johnson, right? Yeah.
Who wants to face that, right? Like Connor Bedard in you can put him anywhere, right? Connor Bedard in Montreal with Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki. How much fun would that be to watch? Or Bedard in Arizona with Clayton Keller on the wing. You know, it would be, or how about this one, Mike? Connor Bedard and Alex Ovechkin together in Washington. You can't tell me Ovi's not looking at that and thinking, oh, 900, 1,000 goals. Let's go. Let's set them up. I mean, the vision and everything that Bedard brings to the table and having a guy like Alex Ovechkin to set up, come on. That would be so much fun. So, like, you can kind of fantasize and imagine what it would look like because he is that good. He has the chance to be that kind of foundational player that you build your team around. And, you know, we talk about him in the same breath as Connor McDavid, as Austin Matthews, as Sidney Crosby, because you look at what he accomplished this season as not just a star player, but people forget he's not going to be 18 until after he gets drafted. He's not just the best player. He's one of the youngest players in this draft class. It's just, it's remarkable what he's been able to accomplish and the way it projects moving forward. He's just going to be a special, special player.
Yeah, I mean, John Paddock, the Regina coach, was asked when the season had concluded for the Pats, you know, what do you think about Bedard? And, you know, you think he's going to be in a starting lineup, an NHL lineup next season? And Paddock just looked at the, you know, that media person that asked the question and said, you know, he's not coming back here, that's for sure. And, you know, he's going to have a real successful NHL career. So, obviously John has seen and been with many of the best, many of the greats in past, you know, NHL history. So, you know, look, Bedard is, like he said, in his post game, you know, series interviews, you know, he's looking now to maybe get some rest. He wants to, actually, you know, when he comes back from getting that rest, he'll work on stuff for the NHL combine, whether it be the bike tests or whether it be something else, but he's just looking for some downtime right now before, you know, the wave hits. And we all know that wave usually hits come, you know, when the draft lottery, I'm sure, you know, networks will have Bedard as a guest on their networks and interviewing him for the potential of going here or there. He wasn't really curious about it, Adam, when asked about it. You know, are you curious about, you know, what's going to happen at the lottery and which team's going to get one or two? He said, you know, he was pretty gracious about it. He basically said, you know, you can't really worry about that. I'm not really worried about it. He said that there are tons of players in this draft who could go number one. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Bedard's the guy. I mean, he was a special player. It was great to go to Regina and watch him play those few games when I was able to do so in March. And Fantilli is right there as well, as Dan Moore, mentioned, another special player. And whoever gets number two, I would imagine he would go to. I mean, there's always that Leo Carlson, Matvei Michkov dynamic that's thrown in there. We all know the caliber of talent that Michkov is. But, you know, as Dan laid out, it's going to be pretty tough. You sometimes when you're picking that high in the draft, you want to get the sure thing, and maybe a Leo Carlson or maybe even a William Smith, Adam. Dan spoke glowingly about William Smith and what he's meant to the NTDP. It's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to the lottery to see who gets that top pick. And as you laid out there, Adam, there's going to be tons of options wherever Bedard goes for those teams that are looking for that that elite caliber generational type player in their lineup. So let's get to it, man. Let's go.
Yep. May 8th is the draft lottery. We'll find out who wins the Connor Bedard sweepstakes. But if you want to learn more about Connor Bedard, if you haven't learned enough about him from listening to us talk about him, listening to Dan Marr talk about him, you can hear from the man himself. We've spoken to Connor Bedard. Check out previous episodes of NHL Draft Class. You know, Connor talked a lot about the things he's kind of handled during his season. And we also talked to other guys around the hockey world. We had Michigan coach Brandon Nerado on. He talked about Adam Fantilli and what could be next for Fantilli. Is he ready to jump into the NHL? We've also spoken to Braden Jaeger, another top prospect for this year's draft. And we're going to have a lot more top prospects, top scouts, the great minds of Central Scouting. So listen to previous episodes of NHL Draft Class, but subscribe now. Make sure you keep yourself ready to go, ready to hear who we're going to talk to next as we get closer to the NHL draft. Mike, things are picking up. We got the lottery coming up. The combine is going to be here before we know it. We'll be in Nashville walking down Broadway waiting to see who gets picked where.
Looking forward to it, Adam. A lot of coffee, buddy.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Oh, I already had one cup today. I'm loading up. I'm going to be just like you, Mike.
Attaboy. Attaboy.
But as for now, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.